Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Science fiction coming up in this hour. Later on, we'll hear X-1 from 1955. But right now, it's the CBS Radio Workshop with Robert Nathan's story, A Pride of Carrots. The author will actually narrate in this next broadcast, heard on CBS on September 14th, 1956.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
Well, folks, that just about winds up tonight's broadcast from the interplanetary rocket ship American Initiative. If Commander Potter's astral navigation continues to hold as true as it has so far, I will be broadcasting to you tomorrow night at this time from the planet Venus, which even now looms dead ahead of us, brighter and somewhat larger than our own moon. This is J. Alexander Caudle speaking for Caledonia Oil, Shirley White Toothpaste, Einus Kleinus Nuck Beer, and Bar None Dog Food, and returning you now to the CBS studios on Earth.
CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, A Pride of Carrots, or Venus Well Served, by the noted American novelist Robert Nathan. And here to tell his story is Mr. Nathan himself.
According to recent newspaper reports, scientists have been hearing strange and mysterious radio signals which they are convinced are broadcast from the planet Venus. And this may very well be the case. No one knows for certain that life exists on the other planets, but then no one can say for certain that it does not. And if it does, no one can say what form that life may take. One man's guess is as good as another's, and this is mine. This is the way Venus looks to me.
Feels good to stretch your legs again.
Sure does. You feel heavier or lighter?
Just normal.
Then the gravity's about the same as Earth. Look there.
What?
A daisy. You can take off your helmet.
You sure?
Sure. The presence of flora indicates the presence of air.
Quite good air, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that rocket was getting a little musty. Well, this is a solemn moment, Commander.
It is indeed, Caudle, the first man on Venus. Hand me the flag, will you?
Oh, here you are.
I hereby claim this planet for the United States of America.
Through the courtesy of Caledonia Oil, Shirley White Toothpaste, Einus Kleinus Nuck Beer, and Bar None Dog Food.
Oh, really, Caudle, must you?
Well, it's in my contract.
But we aren't on the air.
Well, a little rehearsal never hurt anyone. Anyway, we will be as soon as the tubes on this walkie-talkie warm up. 1, 2, 3, 4, testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, testing. There we are. CBS on Earth from Caudle on Venus. CBS on Earth from Caudle on Venus. How do you read me? That's funny. They're standing by around the clock on this frequency. Earth from Venus. Earth from Venus. Come in, Earth.
Maybe freak atmospherics.
Oh, fine. At a time like this to run into freak... Potter.
Yes?
Do you see what I see over there in those bushes?
Speaking of freaks.
What is it?
Well, it looks like a little horse.
Yeah, but it's got wings and a sort of beak.
And a tail like a kangaroo. And it's coming this way.
Where's the ray gun?
I'll get it.
All right, stand back, you filthy beast. Go away. Go away.
I beg your pardon.
You talk?
Oh, naturally I talk. So do you. Haven't I seen you somewhere before?
Certainly not.
Oh, I'm sure I have. Oh, yes, on CBS. The outside of the inside of the news. You're J. Alexander Caudle.
Do you mean to say you get our programs here on Venus?
Venus? What do you mean, Venus? You're from Venus up there. We call it the evening star at certain times of the year.
But that's Earth.
Nonsense. This is Earth. That's Venus. Silly, isn't it? But that's semantics for you. For instance, what would you call a group of carrots?
Bunch.
Bunch? Oh, good heavens, no. A pride of carrots. That is, of course, on this side of the border. And a gaggle of onions. But if you were on the other side of the border, it would be an exaltation of onions and a deceit of carrots. Semantics, you see. It depends on your point of view.
I see.
A charm of Griffin's.
You are a Griffin, I take it?
Of course. Rather highly placed, as a matter of fact. Now, you notice my gold collar? I belong to the Secretary of the Interior. My name is Fido.
And the Secretary?
A very able Carrot. Quite famous in his own right, but even more so for his wife's tassel. You've seen ordinary carrots, no doubt, with their green tops. But this is a most unusual tassel. Blue! Everyone is copying it.
How does it happen that you, an animal, belong to a vegetable?
Well, one has to eat.
Vegetables?
Oh, dear, no. Caraway seeds, truffles, marzipan. You look a little like marzipan yourself. You mind if I try...
Hey, cut it out! Stop biting me!
Delicious, but definitely not marzipan. What is it?
Meat, you fool.
You don't say. Meat. I never tasted meat before.
You'll meat yourself.
I am? Splendid. I'll just try me. Ooh, that hurt.
Well, of course it hurt. Now stop this nonsense and lead us to your master.
Oh, yes, of course. That's why I'm here, isn't it? Follow me, fellow animals.
They had not walked far through fields of charming wildflowers which sang like birds until they came to a shady bower of massive ferns. In the middle, reclining on a soft bed of lettuce leaves, were two carrots, much like any other carrot you may have encountered, excepting that one had a tassel of the most brilliant blue. The carrot with a standard green tassel rose as they approached.
Welcome to our planet.
Well, thank you.
In the name of the United States Navy,
Later. Your Majesty, that is, your Majesties.
We are not Majesties. This is a republic. I am Edwin, Secretary of the Interior, and this is my wife, Edwina.
And you're the famous news commentator, J. Alexander Caudle, and your Commander Potter.
Well, precisely, madam.
We've been watching your trip ever since your takeoff, until we lost you when you rounded Mars. You're most welcome.
Well, thank you, madam. You can perhaps conceive the feelings with which Commander Potter and I gaze upon this unfamiliar scene. The first mortals ever to... What's that?
Oh, that's my daughter Alice. She knows all the latest songs. She says she's a cool cat, whatever that is.
Hi, everybody. Company?
Yes, dear. Come here and meet our visitors from outer space. Mr. Caudle, Commander Potter.
Oh, I know all about them, Mother. Welcome to Carritania, gentlemen.
I have already welcomed them, Alice.
Oh, you don't understand the animal kingdom, Father. They'd much rather be welcomed by a young girl.
Really, Alice? Where do you learn such things?
At school, in zoology class.
And where did you learn that song?
I watch your television all the time. I want to be a great actress and sell cigarettes. Do you think I'm mad?
No, that sounds like a very normal ambition to me.
Oh, I like you, Potter. You interest me.
Now, Alice, you simply must stop this prattle. We're all a little on edge, I'm afraid. This last day of waiting has been... Well, after all, they could have landed in Onionopolis.
But they didn't. The onions didn't get them. We got them.
The onions?
Yes. You see, our planet is divided into two countries. The Democratic Union of Carritania and the United Socialist Republics of Leeks and Onions. They are constantly threatening us with war.
Well, why?
They want us to be onions.
But that's absurd.
Of course it's absurd, especially when we realize that the only possible thing for everyone to be, if he wants to live a decent kind of life, is a carrot.
Oh, naturally.
But the onions won't see it our way, and they can't be trusted. I'm given to understand that they plan to use nematodes. It's race suicide, of course.
Nematodes? How do you think? Aren't they the tiny worms that all but ruined the citrus in California back in the 40s?
I don't know much about citrus. Not exactly my line, you know. But here, the nematodes eat vegetables, a kind of virus, too small to see. We've tried to outlaw them, but the onions won't agree. Ah, well, we'll wipe each other out, I suppose, and the spiders can take over. It's sad to think about. Just spider webs everywhere.
You know, it seems to me that they worked out a way to fumigate for nematodes out in California. See, if I could just get through to CBS on Earth, I could find out.
You've had difficulties getting through?
Well, at any rate, Earth isn't getting through to me.
I'm sure we could get you through on a planet-to-planet hookup, particularly if you can find out anything about fumigating for nematodes.
Hey, Commander, you hear that? We're going on the air after all.
Oh, splendid. Do you want me to make a prepared report, or shall we ad-lib?
Well, you better type the report. You can ad-lib to your wife.
Oh, Oh, you have a wife, Potter.
Oh, yes, my dear. Every Navy man over a full lieutenant has a wife.
A woman, I presume?
Oh, yes, definitely. Has to be, you know.
What is your wife like, Potter?
Why, she's female, like this.
How odd. Bumpy, isn't she?
Well,
You're not bumpy, Potter.
No, I suppose not.
Yes, well, Your Excellency, how soon do you think you can get us on the air?
We should be able to have it set up in a few hours.
Well, now, my regular spot is 8:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You think you can make it?
We'll do our best.
Oh, great. Hey, this calls for a celebration. It's too bad we haven't a bottle of champagne.
Champagne? What's that?
Well, a kind of bubbly wine.
Wine is made from grapes, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not sure I like the idea. Some of our best friends are grapes.
Yes, well, don't worry, ma'am. We haven't any champagne anyway.
We could break out our emergency rations.
Now, that's a fine idea.
Got a can opener?
Sure, right here. You care to join us, Your Excellency?
Well, I don't know. May I see that can, please?
Oh, sure. Here you are.
U.S. Navy for emergency use only. Concentrated carrot juice.
Oh, Potter,
guards, seize these men. Put them under arrest. They're onions in disguise.
Our scene shifts now to Onionopolis, capital of the United Socialist Republic of Leeks and Onions, which controls half of the planet Venus. We are in the office of the Secretary General of the party, a large, fat, white onion named Odor, as General Shallot enters.
Death to carrots.
Death to carrots. Well, General,
the rumor has been verified by the underground. They landed near Carrotopolis this morning.
How did you permit this to happen, General?
Unfortunately, our side of the planet was turned away from the direction they were traveling, so they landed on the backside, comrade.
Excuses, excuses. We must have those spacemen, General. We must have their technical skill before the carrots get it, or we will be in the soup.
Yes, comrade.
It is insufferable that we who invented television, jet propulsion, the atomic bomb and the bicycle should be deprived of these two men who can tell us how to use them. It is an outrage, a national insult. Death to carrots.
Likewise.
I want those two spacemen.
It may be difficult, comrade.
You could call me Excellency or Little Father. Everyone does.
I am a descendant of the Garlics. A garlic does not call anything Excellency.
Of course, I was only joking. Here we are all comrades, all Excellencies, Little Fathers. Except Leeks, of course.
Of course. Death to carriage.
Death to carriage. By the way, General, what are you doing tonight?
Imperialistic warmongers. Nothing.
Capitalistic schwein. Come have dinner with me.
Decadent bourgeois. Love to.
And those spacemen must be bourgeois, too, or they would have landed here.
Possibly.
Undoubtedly, but we will change their point of view once we have made them our guests, eh, comrade?
That might not be so wise, comrade.
Why not? Don't you want to learn how to set off guided missiles and ride bicycles?
That is not the point, comrade. If we abduct these spacemen, we give Carritania a splendid opportunity to protest. And you must remember, comrade, protests are weapons, too. The very best weapons. They cost nothing, and properly used, they create an odor, a real onion odor.
Then you are opposed to kidnapping these spacemen.
Definitely.
Very well, I shall think about it. You could go, General.
Thank you, comrade.
Oh, by the way, I have news for you. You have just been promoted to field marshal.
Thank you, comrade. Strength to onion.
Strength to onion. See you at dinner.
Death to carrot. I'll be there.
Death to carrots, 8:30 sharp. Hello? Secret police? General Shallot has just left my office. Liquidate him.
I'm hungry. Wonder when they feed their prisoners in this lousy jail.
What difference does it make unless you have an appetite for bone meal, ammonium sulfate, and peat moss?
Ugh, guess I'm not hungry after all.
You shouldn't have shown him the label on the can, old man. That's what did it.
Well, how could I tell? I thought it'd be chicken consomme. It
usually is.
Just when I had the greatest broadcast in history lined up.
Now what?
There's a lady to see you.
Miss Alice.
Shh, not so loud. Thank you, Sergeant. You can leave us now.
Mind you, Miss Alice, this is contrary to your father's orders and against my better judgment.
Oh, I know, Sergeant, but it's utterly divine of you.
I shall be just outside. Scream if you need help.
You wouldn't hurt me, would you, Potter?
I'm glad to have you aboard, ma'am.
They say that you're dangerous vegetarians, that you eat carrots. Do you really?
Well, you see, ma'am...
I don't believe it. You're much too nice to eat poor little me.
Thank you, ma'am.
You know, you yourself are a vegetarian, Miss Alice.
I am not. I'm a vegetable. It's not the same thing at all.
Well, now, just answer me this. What will happen to you when you die?
I'll be buried, of course, in the national compost heap.
Uh-huh, from which the rich, steaming soil is taken to nourish the young carrots, right?
Of course.
Which then must of necessity feed upon your decayed flesh.
Why, of course. Why, how madly amusing. I really did eat my ancestors, didn't I? Oh, but I missed Mother and Father.
Well, I should hope so.
But now what could be more satisfying to a girl's psyche than to have her father under her belt?
Oh, have you been through analysis?
Of course, haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, it's so nice to be able to talk the same language, isn't it? My analyst says the trouble with me is my mother has a blue top.
Exactly. The active competition of an adult parent.
It tends to make me aggressive. Kiss me, Potter.
Huh? What?
Kiss me.
Good Lord, really, I...
Are you afraid, Potter? It isn't even spring. I don't come into blossom till July.
Well, I know, but...
Am I not beautiful? Am I not to be desired? By the Navy?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed, but...
I could have your head, Potter, on a silver tray, like Salome.
I know, but...
I could set you free.
Well, for heaven's sake, kiss her and get it over with.
No, but... You smell so good, like a grocery store.
Ooh, it's like April. Is this love, Potter?
How can I feel this way about a carrot?
I feel a strange heat, not like the sun.
Like a garden in the summer.
I don't feel at all like a vegetable.
I wouldn't have thought it possible.
Look, how about getting us out of here?
The time is up, folks.
Oh, yes, I suppose it is. Oh, but don't worry, my darling. I'll be back. I'll be back quickly to set you free. You'll see.
Well, there's the Navy for you. What have you fellas got that I haven't got?
Blossoms in our hair.
Ah. You really like the girl, don't you?
Yes.
Well, now, of course, it's none of my business, but what about Mrs. Potter?
What about her?
Well, she isn't going to like this pretty vegetable of yours.
Caudle, could you be jealous of a stalk of celery?
I am not married.
No, of course, that does make a difference. Oh, I wish we were safe at home. There's something frightening about being in love with a carrot.
You smell anything, Commander?
No.
That's funny. For a moment, I thought I smelled onions.
Well, that's not very likely.
I don't know. My eyes are watering.
Mine, too. You know, I do smell onions.
Gentlemen.
Who are you?
You are free, gentlemen.
She did manage it then.
This way. Hurry, please.
Where is she? I can't see very well. My eyes are full of tears.
She's waiting for you, sir.
Just a minute, Commander. This isn't a carrot. It's an onion.
Take them, comrades.
So you see, gentlemen, we have no choice. The stakes were too high, being no less than war or peace.
What are you talking about?
Simply this, Commander Potter of the U.S. Navy. How do you make war?
How do we do what?
Make war. How do you destroy whole armies, cities, countries, with all their inhabitants, without, at the same time, annihilating yourselves? Unfortunately, there is no blight that will make compost out of carrots without doing the same for onions. I have to think of my people.
Bless you, little father.
Thank you, Spindleskull. You see, Commander, we are still in the drawing board stage. We need technicians.
Don't look at me.
My dear Commander, you must understand that the end justifies the means. When onions rule the world, who would wish to be a carrot? I offer you an important place in history.
The only place I want to be is next to a girl with a carrot top who smells like a garden after rain.
Now, let us not grow emotional. But perhaps you are closer to her than you think. Will you teach us to make war, Commander? You see, I am giving you another chance. Opportunity rarely knocks so often.
I will not.
Very well. Perhaps we will find a way to make you change your mind. There is a little experiment I am planning with a pot of boiling water. How would you like to see your, shall we say, girlfriend floating about with only a marrow bone for company? A quite excellent soup, petite marmite, I believe it is called.
You're bluffing.
Am I? We shall see. Spindle.
Yes, little father.
Take these gentlemen to the solarium and entertain them. Show them the vampire marigolds and the lizard-eating oleander, and they might be amused to watch the muerte vine digest its daily mouse.
I warn you, Odor, the United States Navy will not take this lying down.
Nor will CBS.
This way, animals.
Send in the other prisoner. Well, well, come in, young lady. Don't be bashful. I won't eat you.
What do you want with me? Why did you bring me here?
I suppose you wouldn't care to tell me the whereabouts of the Carrot 8 Army. No? Oh, you, so stupid, so impulsive, so desirable, but so uncooperative. By the way, your friend Commander Potter is here. He, too, has proven uncooperative. We may have to press him a little.
He wouldn't dare.
He is being shown the muerte vines at this very moment.
Not the meat eaters.
Why not? The commander is meat, I believe.
Oh, no, no, not that.
Of course, I could be persuaded to change my mind. Oh, you have such lovely skin, my dear. So moist and tender.
Please.
You smell good, too, like a salad. Fragrant, but delicate. What freshness, what youth. I adore you.
I loathe you.
You do not realize your situation. One word from me, you are in the soup.
I would 1,000 times...
Or what is perhaps more to the point, your friend Mr. Potter is left alone with the vampire marigold.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, that fetches you. You really care for him, don't you?
More than life.
All the better. It is much more exciting to make love to a woman already in love. It adds a kind of seasoning, as it were.
You nettle. You noisome weed.
Splendid, splendid. So sweet and so hot, almost like a Spanish onion.
Is this the way you make war? On women and children?
War? Who is making war? I'm making love.
You are odious to me.
Very well, we will try, Mr. Potter, in the muerte vines.
No, 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 I can't stand it.
You give up? You give in?
Will he have a safe conduct back to my father?
Yes, yes.
Will there be one for me?
Later.
Write it out.
But of course. For Mr. Potter, a pass. Also for Mr. Cordle. And now for Miss Alice.
Yes, little father?
Spindle. You will let the spaceman go, and you will see that this lady is returned to her own people later.
It shall be done, little father.
Now, divine creature, at last you are mine.
No, no, stand back.
Silly girl, drop that paper knife and receive the kiss of the little father.
No, no! It is thus a Carrot kisses.
Alice!
Oh, Potter, Potter, thank heavens you're safe.
You're crying.
It's nothing, nothing. It's only onion juice. Here, your passes. Go quickly, both of you.
And you?
I must wait for a little while. If I go with you now, they'll be suspicious.
No. If we have to die, then we'll die together.
Oh, no, no, my dear Potter. That wouldn't help my country, or this little world, or even me. I've become very sensible, Potter, very realistic. Don't you see? It doesn't matter about me. But you, Potter, you're the hope of the future. Look, I'll try to catch up to you at the frontier. If I don't come, be kind to Carrots, Potter, for my sake. Go now, and God bless you.
Come on, Potter, we're on the air in an hour.
Hurry, hurry, they're coming back.
I'm staying with you.
No, no, my dearest Potter, go. Go, the world needs you. The universe needs you.
Come on, Potter.
Farewell then, my dearest Alice.
Ladies and gentlemen of Earth and other species throughout the planetary system, this is J. Alexander Caudill, bringing you the very first broadcast from Venus. Through the courtesy of Caledonia Oil, Shirley White Toothpaste, Heinous, Kleinus, Nuck beer, and bar none dog food. Oh, excuse me a moment, ladies and gentlemen. There's some confusion here in the studio. We've just received a bulletin. What's that? Oh, no. Alice? In the soup?
I'll need a pound of peas.
Pound of peas.
And a cauliflower.
Cauliflower. You must be very happy to have your husband back again, Mrs. Potter. And all those write-ups in the papers, my goodness. Did he really get to Venus like they said? I missed the broadcast.
Yes, he did. A bottle of ketchup.
A bottle of ketchup. Mm-hmm. You know, he looks a little thin in his pictures. I guess maybe they didn't have much to eat up there.
I guess not.
What was it like? Did he tell you?
He hasn't said much. 4 dozen onions.
4 dozen?
That's right. He eats them all the time. Raw.
Raw? They say onions are good for colds.
I know.
There's lots of things like that, like carrots make your hair curly.
Oh, he won't touch carrots.
He won't. Not even cooked.
Not even cooked. I served a petite marmite the other night, and he got up and left the table.
No. Now, isn't that something?
One sack of peat moss.
What's that for?
He says he's got blossoms in his hair.
That'll be $3.47, Mrs. Potter. I'll have someone take them out to the car for you.
Thank you.
Goodbye now. Blossoms in his hair? In February?
CBS Radio Workshop, produced in Hollywood by William N. Robeson, has presented A Pride of Carrots.
The CBS Radio Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from September 14, 1956 on the Columbia Broadcasting System. Author Robert Nathan, whose story was featured, also wrote other programs for radio, for the series Romance, The Columbia Workshop, and probably among his most famous was turned into a film called Portrait of Jenny, billed as a fantasy on the edge of time. It's an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time for X-1 from July 14, 1955. It's the Fletcher Pratt story, Dr. Grimshaw's Sanitarium.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds.
X minus one.
Tonight's story. Dr. Grimshaw's Sanitarium. What you will hear in the next half hour represents either a magnificent hoax or the true explanation of the famous Grimshaw Sanitarium scandal which made the headlines back in 1947. The manuscript upon which this account is based was removed by the New York State Police from a fountain pen cover found in the doorway to Dr. Grimshaw's study. We offer this manuscript as evidence only. Whether it is authentic or not, you must judge for yourselves.
My name is John Dougherty. I'm a graduate of Hamilton College, class of 34, member of Theta Alpha. I'm one of those fools who wanted some excitement in life, so instead of going into my father's shoe business, I became a private detective. These are facts. You can check them if you like. The rest of what I write here is so fantastic that I don't expect it to be believed. If anyone should find this manuscript and read it, all I ask is that you notify Miss Millicent Armbruster of 299 Wallace Avenue, Buffalo, that Johnny Dougherty is dead. On the evening of July 1st, Miss Armbruster and I were driving to a wedding. Not our own, although I wish it had been. It was Sunday, and in order to avoid traffic, I took the Old Mill Road, a single-lane dirt affair that runs past the Gowanda Cemetery.
Johnny, aren't you going too fast?
Not for this road. There's nothing around except some tombstones and...
Johnny, the gate to the cemetery.
Well, what about it?
That hearse, look out! Look out!
We skidded for about 20 feet and slammed into the back of the hearse. The two rear doors buckled and snapped open. It was a freak. A huge oak coffin with brass handles tipped up and began slowly to slide back toward us.
Oh, how horrible.
You stay right here, baby. You okay, Mac?
You don't pay much attention to speed limits, do you, Jack?
Now, look, let's not get hung up on who was right and who was wrong. I was going too fast, and you were traveling without lights after dark.
Let's see your driver's license.
Right here.
Oh. Private eye, eh?
Now, if you don't mind, who does this joy wagon belong to?
Go on the funeral service. It's being rented to Grimshaw.
Who?
Grimshaw from the private sanitarium.
Mind if I ask what you were doing after dark coming out of a cemetery with a wooden kimono?
We're moving one of Grimshaw's patients to a new grave.
They always travel like this?
Look, Hawkshaw, how about skipping the third degree and giving me a hand getting this box back in the wagon?
A pleasure. Better screw on that cover again. It's going to slide off.
Let's get it in the hearse first.
Okay, Junior. You get on that end.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah, lift.
Now just slide it.
Oh, brother, who's in there, King Kong?
Look out for the cover.
I told you that would happen. What's the guy's name, Junior?
Oh, why don't you ask him, Sherlock Holmes?
A real wise guy, huh? I've got half a mind to report this accident.
Yeah, well, go ahead. See where it gets you. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'll deliver the body.
Everything all right, Johnny?
Yeah, I thought so until a few seconds ago. Listen, Millie, can you sit here in the car for another 5 minutes?
Where are you going?
For a stroll through the cemetery.
Oh, Johnny, stop making jokes.
When we lifted that coffin back on the meat wagon, I got a good look inside it.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly how I felt. I figured we'd knock the stuffing out of the corpse, only I didn't expect the stuffing to be sand.
What?
Yes. That wasn't a body, that was a dummy stuffed with sand, a dummy with a wax face.
Johnny!
Which brings up an interesting question. Who's supposed to be in that box, and, just where is the dead man spending his time? Sometimes in my business, when things drop off, you have to go out and, well, dig up new clients. My next case was a gentleman named Harlan Ward Sr., a wealthy automobile manufacturer. I'd gotten his name off his son's tombstone.
Are you trying to tell me, Dorothy, that my son Harlan was never buried at Gowanda Cemetery?
Exactly, Mr. Ward.
But why?
Maybe if you'll tell me the circumstances surrounding your son's death, I can help answer that.
My son was a rather impetuous young man. Tall, good-looking. After his graduation from Princeton, he began drinking quite heavily. After he got into a couple of scrapes, we sent him to Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium in the hopes that he could be cured. While my wife and I were in Europe, we received word that he died. Buried at Gowanda in our absence. Last week, my wife and I decided to have his body removed to the family vault here at Short Hills.
How'd your son die?
Suicide.
You never saw the body?
No. We couldn't get back from Europe in time. Now, you told me that his coffin contains a dummy. How do I know this whole thing isn't a plan to fleece me?
You don't. But you're a rich man, Mr. Ward, and you're perfectly willing to take a chance that I'm on the level and that your son may still be alive.
You sound very sure of yourself, Mr. Dougherty.
My fee is a $2,000 retainer plus expenses.
What sort of expenses?
However much it costs to take the cure at Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium. Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium was just outside Gowanda. Most of the cases were nervous breakdowns and alcoholics. I committed myself as a dipso, and just to make it convincing, I stopped at five or six bars on the way over. I was interviewed by Grimshaw himself, a small man with a fringe of white hair.
You understand, Mr. Doherty.
That's not my real name, of course, social reasons.
We understand. Our paid clientele is very select, and our rates are very high.
You'll be paid in cash and in advance, Dr. Grimshaw. How long does a cure usually take?
That, of course, depends on the degree of alcoholism. This is my assistant, Dr. Voynoff.
How do you do?
How do you do?
We are accepting Mr. Doherty as a patient. Better place him in the ward with Mr. Kay and Mr. Crakey. Mr. Kay is a long-term patient, Mr. Doherty. A highly intelligent man, formerly a professor of plant pathology. Mr. Crakey suffers mild delusions. I think you'll find him rather amusing.
After about 3 days, my roommates Arthur Kay and Crakey got used to me. And we even began to play three-handed bridge. Kay was a chronic dope addict, an intelligent, sensitive man. Crakey was nothing but a clown. He kept a big black cat named the Professor, which he talked to as if it were human.
And so I said to her, "My dear Countess, if you don't like the company of my cat, then you don't like me." She looked at me as if I were insane. But, of course, the joke was on her because I was. Eh, Professor?
Meow.
The Professor is very sociable. Excellent company.
Except when he kills birds and deposits them in your bed. He's nothing but a feline murderer as far as I'm concerned.
See? You have insulted him, Mr. K.
Come here, Professor. Let's make friends. How about giving me your paw? Oh! Scratched me, you black devil.
You insulted him. You hurt his feelings.
Well, just keep him away from me.
It will be a pleasure. I would advise you not to insult him again. Good afternoon and evening.
Whew. Is he always as nuts as that?
Ever since I've been here.
What's his problem?
Manic depressive. And a little paranoid, too.
How long have you been here, Arthur?
At Grimshaw's? 2 years. I left for a while, but I couldn't stay away from the junk, so I committed myself again.
Did you, happen to know a patient here named Harlan Ward?
Why do you ask that? Did you know him?
I met him socially a few times. I understand he died here.
So the newspapers said. I wouldn't know.
Suicide, wasn't it?
Was it?
You're being pretty careful, aren't you?
Mr. Doherty, what would you say if I were to tell you that I don't believe Harlan Ward is dead?
What makes you so certain?
He used to share this room with us. He slept in the same bed you now use.
I see.
He was an alcoholic, doing quite well, too, from what I could observe. We all expected him to go home soon. Then one evening he had a violent fight with Crakey. Crakey accused him of snooping or something. Later that night, Grimshaw and Voyner took him out.
Where?
Where they take all the special treatment cases to the charity clinic. It's that small building on the other side of the stone wall. A few days later, we read about his death. Suicide, they said.
That's what makes you think he's still alive, Arthur.
This? About a month ago, I was in the garden next to the wall that separates us from the charity clinic. Suddenly, I thought I heard a sound, like a child whimpering. It stopped. And a moment later, this note came over the wall, wrapped around a stone.
What's it say?
Help me, for God's sake, Harlan Ward.
Arthur, how would you like to have some fun?
Like what?
Like sneaking out tonight and going over the wall to the charity ward? What do you say? It would break the monotony a little.
I suppose there's no real harm in it.
Of course not. I'd go alone, but I'll need help scaling the wall. Will you do it?
All right. I'll go with you.
Up. All clear. Give me your hand and I'll lift you. Be careful when you drop. Ready?
Go ahead.
There.
There's a charity building over there, the one with the lights in the basement window.
Right, come on. Let's crawl over. Maybe we can see something. Shh. Listen. Can you make out what he's saying?
No, I can barely hear. Good Lord.
What was that?
Probably some patient having the DTs.
Let's have a look. Easy, it wouldn't do to get caught now.
See anything?
Well, it's some sort of laboratory. I can see Grimshaw and Voynin and something else. But there's a child with its back toward me.
Now take it quietly. It will be easier. Please, no! It will all be over soon. You won't remember anything.
No, I don't want to go!
Voynin, give it to him.
No!
Let him know, Voynin!
Good Lord. What was it? What did they do to that child? Mother, that wasn't a child. It was a midget. The smallest midget I've ever seen. What were they doing? Trying to give it some sort of injection. When it resisted, Voynin knocked it out. What do you suppose they were doing to it? I don't know, Arthur. All I know is that when it fell, it had the face of Harlan Ward. All the way back to our room, my brain was working like some frantic pinball machine. Only the score somehow wouldn't add up. The pieces were there, all right. A crazy old doctor, a brutal assistant, a private sanitarium, and a midget with a dead man's face. I thought that when I got back to our room, I'd have some time to think about it. I'd forgotten about our friend, the happiness boy, Count Crakey.
Caught you.
Fine, you've caught us. Now, how about crawling back into the woodwork like a good little count?
Where were you?
Mink hunting. Arthur and I like to go mink hunting at night.
You make fun of Count Crakey? I shall report you to Dr. Voynin.
You'd better not if you know what's good for you.
So, you threaten me. Me, Count Crakey. I shall scream for help. Help! Help!
Did you hurt him?
Just knocked him out.
What do we do now?
Put him to bed. Hope that when he wakes up in the morning, he's forgotten the whole thing.
And if he hasn't?
He's too crazy for them to take seriously anyway. Come on, let's get him back into bed. I went to sleep in my own room. And the next thing I felt was the sharp jab of the hypodermic needle in my left arm.
Hold it. It'll be useless to struggle, Mr. Doherty. In a moment, your motor nerves will be completely paralyzed.
What's this about, Grimshaw?
I might ask the same of you. My good friend Count Crakey informs me you and Mr. K decided to do some snooping earlier tonight. He followed you and saw you climb the wall.
Crakey's insane.
Mr. Doherty, that is a matter of opinion.
Crakey, what is this?
Perhaps my assistant, Dr. Grimshaw, would be good enough to explain.
Assistant?
Yes. You see, I am the actual head of the Grimshaw Sanatorium.
Count Crakey feigns many delusions, Mr. Doherty. But in this case, he is telling the truth. Count Crakey is actually Professor Ernst Hassler. Professor Hassler and I were together in the Berlin Neurological Institute before and during the last war.
Unfortunately, my political affiliations with the Third Reich were under investigation by the War Crimes Commission. However, Dr. Grimshaw managed to smuggle me into this country, where I masqueraded as a mental patient, in order that we might continue certain experiments which were interrupted by the American army.
I can imagine the sort of experiments you conducted.
You and your friend Mr. K will discover their exact nature very shortly, Mr. Doherty. It is a magnificent opportunity to serve science.
And the next thing I knew, I was coming to in a different room and hearing the voices of Voynin, Grimshaw, and Crakey as if from a great distance.
Pituitary.
Pituitary.
4 cc's.
4 cc's.
How are the measurements?
Reducing rapidly.
We'll operate at once. Have Voynin start the anesthesia.
Very well, Doctor. Come back.
Came to again, I had a blinding headache. I began to wonder if Crakey and Grimshaw weren't doing something to drive me insane, because I lost all sense of perspective. The room seemed to grow in size. I don't know how much time passed, but one day Craigie came into the room with a bundle in his arms about the size of a newborn baby. The bundle was my friend, Arthur Kay. And worse yet, I was exactly the same size that he was.
Let me out of here. Let me out.
Allow me to congratulate you, gentlemen. How are you feeling?
You dirty monster.
I'm disappointed, gentlemen. Do you not feel privileged to be a part of an experiment that will place me at the very top rank of the world's endocrinologists?
What are you doing to us, you madman?
It has long been established, gentlemen, that dwarfism and giantism result from injury to or malfunction of the pituitary and thyroid glands. The interlock between these glands was thought to be a hormone. I have discovered that this was incorrect. It was an enzyme. An enzyme I isolated some years ago. I was well on the way to synthesis in Germany when the surrender interrupted me. The interruption also limited the number and type of subjects on whom I could experiment. I was forced to find others.
Such as Harlan Ward?
Mr. Ward was only a control experiment.
I suppose you plan the same for us?
No, gentlemen. For you, I have reserved a special privilege. You, gentlemen, will be the first to test the full effects of the enzyme. In short, I intend that you, Mr. Kay, and you, Mr. Doherty, when the experiment is completed, will emerge as perfectly healthy, normal individuals. Except, of course, that you will be only 5 inches tall.
The days and nights that followed were a living nightmare. A nightmare from which Arthur and I awoke for brief periods to find ourselves in a strange new world. A huge, frightening world where everything seemed enlarged 100 times. When we finally emerged, we found ourselves imprisoned in a tiny mouse cage. Judging by the relative size of things, we could not have been more than 5 inches tall. Now we realized the experiment was at an end. That from now on, it was either escape or be destroyed.
How's it coming, Arthur? Another moment. I think I'll have this lock. It was loose. And if we escape, then what?
We'll worry about that after we get out of this mouse cage.
Suppose we don't make it. At least you've written the story on that scrap of paper. Someone may find it and read it.
Nobody will believe it.
Then why did you bother to write it?
I don't know. I suppose I want the world to know what happened to me.
That does it. Help me push the door open. Now what? The first job is getting down to the floor. I think we can make it by sliding down the telephone cord. Are you game?
Go ahead. I'm right behind you.
Easy now.
Look out!
That does it. Now, if we can figure out a way to get out of the room,
well, that should be... Uh-oh. Listen.
Somebody's coming.
It must be Craigie. We've got to hide.
Here. The grate in the fireplace.
He'll kill us if he finds us.
Be quiet.
Well, my friends, time for feeding. I trust that you... So, you have managed to break out. It won't do, you know. There is no way you could have gotten out of the room with the door and window locked. I know you are in here. I would advise you to save yourselves trouble and give up. Very well, my tiny friends. If you prefer to play the game of cat and mouse, then I shall be happy to furnish the cat. There is no way you can get out.
What now? He's gone for the cat.
If that monster ever gets in here, we're goners. There must be... Wait a minute.
What?
You see that thin strand of wire running along the molding?
What about it?
It's the automatic fire alarm. When the alarm is tripped by a fire or short circuit, all the locks are sprung so that the patients can escape from their rooms. If I can short that wire before Craigie lets the cat into the building,
let's go.
There's a tiny sliver of steel from the cage on the floor. I'll work with that. You keep an ear to the door.
Go ahead.
This insulation is tough as rawhide. Blast this stuff.
Hurry up, Arthur, for God's sake.
There it is. Stand away. I'm going to short it. Ready?
Okay.
We made it. There goes the door.
Let's make a run for it down the hall. If we can get to the garden, we've got a chance.
I smell smoke. The short man's actually started the fire. Come on. Wait a minute. I have to go back. The manuscript.
Don't be a fool. There's no time. Come on.
You go ahead. I'll catch you.
Hurry up. I'll wait in the hall.
Only a second. I got it. Come on. There's nothing to stop us now. Arthur? Where are you? It's funny. Arthur? Arthur? Arthur, what's happened to you?
This is the record found in a fountain pen cover in the burned-out hallway of Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium. There's nothing to add, except that the fire which destroyed the sanitarium and killed so many of its occupants, including Dr. Grimshaw and Dr. Voyna, was definitely of incendiary nature. It is believed by the fire chief that some small creature, possibly a mouse, chewed the insulation off the wire and short-circuited the system. The two patients, John Doherty and Arthur Kay, vanished completely after the fire, and their remains were never found. Whether the manuscript which you have just heard is authentic, or whether it was the work of one of the more demented inmates of the sanitarium, we leave to your judgment. Tonight's story by transcription was Dr. Grimshaw's Sanitarium, a tale of science fiction written by Fletcher Pratt and adapted for radio by George Lefferts.
X-1 on Tuned 2 yesterday from July 14th, 1955 on NBC. That brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. Thanks for listening.